White Rocket Entertainment.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
It's main event time.
We know each other. He's a friend from work.
Oh, come on.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 272.
It's the Avengers Assemble podcast from the Jarvis Heads of AvengersAssemble.net. Now, here's your host, Van Allen Plexico.
Hello, and welcome to the Avengers Assemble podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment and the Jarvis Heads of AvengersAssemble.net in association with the Earth Station 1 Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined this episode by author, artist, and longtime Jarvis Head, as well as occasional co-host of this program, David Wright. Welcome back aboard, David.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here, finally.
Well, finally for both of us, because this show has been in hiatus for a little while, which I hate, but it has a long future ahead of it, which I'm going to get to in just a minute. It's just been kind of on hiatus because we've been revamping the entire network, and so we've been, as the number I gave out at the beginning of this broadcast just noted, we've been doing quite a few shows. We just have quite a few different shows now, so more than I have time to do them. So, but you've had some technical issues too, but now the two of us are back together, back up and running again. So
tell
the folks what we're going to be talking about particularly tonight.
Well, we're going to talk about Planet Hulk tonight. Mm-hmm. The Thor trailer came out probably a couple months ago now. I wanted to do a reaction podcast to that and couldn't because of my technical problems, this in which I've just now solved. But obviously, Planet Hulk is being incorporated. Elements of it are being incorporated into the Thor movie. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like a good opportunity to kind of study this comic storyline. We're focusing on the comic storyline, but and I had to turn you on to the story. I had to kind of convince you to check it out. So I'm glad that you did, and I'm looking forward to digging into this with you.
Well, the timing worked out really well because I had been looking at the trade paperbacks, collecting it, and they run upwards of 30-something, 40 bucks or whatever. But I recently got an account. I didn't subscribe to anything, but I got an account to Comixology for my iPad, which is tied in now to Amazon, which is very helpful because I can read things on the Kindle app or the Comixology app. I can use my Amazon account to pay for things. It's very, very handy. And in doing so, I found that they had Planet Hulk for $7 on Comixology. I'm like, well, thank goodness I didn't go out and buy that big old trade paperback when I originally was going to, because I got it much, in fact, I ended up paying more for the World War Hulk, like 4-issue epilogue, than I did for the entire Planet Hulk. And in fact, the Planet Hulk, let me go ahead, since we're talking about the Planet Hulk online, you know, I guess digital version trade paperback, half of it's Planet Hulk, and the other half is a whole bunch of other stuff that I didn't even scratch the surface on of what all it is. It didn't even seem like it was very much related to the Hulk.
Was it like official handbook type layout stuff?
No, it was all a bunch of short stories, comic book stories with different characters.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
I don't know what it was. It was roughly the second half of it, because I was noticing at the very beginning of reading it that it was like you're on page like 20 of 450 pages, and I'm like, my gosh, this is a long story. Well, no, the story was only like 200 pages, which is still a lot, even not even maybe that much, but a lot of it was that other thing. So
it ran in Incredible Hulk number 92 through 105. So that's what that's about 13 or 14 issues on a monthly basis, and there was a giant size special thrown in there. So from you know, spring of 2006 for a little over a year there into the middle of 2007.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a sizable story, and a lot happens in it, and it takes its time playing out. But I do think it's, you know, if I had to read a really long Hulk story, at least it's one, because I'm not a big Hulk fan,
right?
But at least it's one that had a lot of very interesting supporting characters. It had several despicable antagonists. It had interesting points of view in that we would see what we saw kind of just neutrally, and then we would see things through the Hulk's point of view where you could see that he's not got it exactly right, but you could also understand why he would feel the way he does, right? I mean,
right.
I thought that Greg Pak, the writer, I thought he did the art's very good all the way through it, too. I always don't want to short shrift the artist, but being primarily a writer, I look at the writing, and I thought that Pak did a very, very, very good job of kind of showing different points of view, and having them evolve. Like, for example, you know, again, you see everything from the Hulk's point of view, and it's an entirely bitter, it's an embittered point of view. But then you see things kind of as a neutral observer, and you get the sense of, well, he's been done wrong, but not on purpose so much, not like the way it happened. And then you even would see some of the supporting characters, like the big bug guy, through their eyes, and then through other people's eyes. You know, the villains through their eyes. It does a lot of interesting things with point of view that I found very effective. So,
well, let me tell you what was impressive about what Pak did here with this story is that, first of all, you have to understand the context of when this story was published.
Yeah.
And quite simply, it was time for the Marvel Civil War storyline, and you just can't do Civil War with Hulk on Earth. Yeah, obviously it doesn't work. They had to find something to do with Hulk during this time so they could have their Civil War story. So it was actually Joe Quesada, who was the editor-in-chief at the time, who had the idea of just sending him to an alien planet to be a gladiator. Well, he gave this high concept to Greg Pak and asked him if he wanted to write it. And he was like, yeah.
Heck yeah.
You know, are you kidding? Hulk on an alien planet fighting monsters as a gladiator. Yeah, done. Got it. But he took that and did so much more with it. Obviously, he really like dug deep into this planet of Sakaar and really developed it. I mean, the official handbook stuff I was referring to earlier is in the back of the trade paperback, but it was also a supplemental little thing they were putting out at the time that you know, it goes into the solar system and the cultures and the history and the different races and all this stuff. So he just tremendous amount of detail and depth went into this whole world. For this one story that was going to last a year. So he really had all developed. And the stuff you were saying is absolutely true. You start to you kind of see the events from different perspectives. When you're seeing it from the Hulk, you understand why he's mad. I mean, you understand why he's angry. At the same time, when the perspective shifts a little bit and you're seeing it from some of the natives, you're seeing why he's revered and inspirational to this entire planet. And Meek in particular is probably the most interesting one because obviously he has his own arc, he has his own transformation, and ends up by the end, you know, being pretty vicious. I'm thinking of his attitude in like World War Hulk. We'll get to that later, I guess. But to throw him into this alien environment, a bunch of crazy, you know, for the most part non-human. Well, that's not true. I was about to say, for the most part, not humanoid, but I'm thinking of the Warbound in particular. A lot of non-humanoid allies there, but we get to know them. And each one of them has a sympathetic storyline and background to them. And so you, in a very short amount of time, the writer is able to like get us to completely buy into this entire brand new supporting cast, and like we're really pulling for them. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, and you're right, I'm not a huge Hulk fan. I don't have a huge collection of Hulk comics, but this is such an easy buy-in for a reader. You know, the high concept. You know, to me, it was like the Hulk crosses with John Carter. How can you go wrong? I mean, I'm sold. I'm going to check it out. And for it to be, for the most part, self-contained, and to have such depth to it, and really, really tapping into the core of the Hulk as a character. You know, he's fueled by rage. Well, you have him on a rage filled planet, and you just give him an environment where that can really be explored. And I found it fascinating. I thought it was an excellent storyline.
Well, you mentioned John Carter, and I wanted to go there because I love how there's a quote. Greg Pak says he got the inspiration from gladiators in ancient Rome, Genghis Khan, Sun Tzu, Joseph Campbell. I'm like, yeah, all that highfalutin stuff. Dude, it's John Carter with a green John Carter. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's cool. But I mean, come on, you got to admit. Now, remember, there's people out there listening to this that are saying, John Carter hadn't even come out yet when this comic was, well, perhaps those people don't understand that John Carter came out in like 1912. Exactly. Or actually, let's say, 1912, because I just picked the date, but I was actually exactly right, because if I remember correctly, the movie came out on the 100th anniversary in 2012. So, yep. John Carter, the books came out back at the beginning of the 20th century, over 100 years ago, and it's the exact idea of a warrior on Earth who gets hurled to another planet, which has a bunch of different races, and they're very warlike, and he has to prove his mettle battling against the various alien races, you know, the red men and the black men and the, I don't know, the green men, the Tharks, you know, and the priest people and all that stuff. I mean, that's exactly what this is. It's just that the Hulk is even cooler in some ways than John Carter. John Carter, it is true, was a Confederate officer, which is pretty darn an immortal. John, not to go off on that too far, but I have to just mention because it's so cool. John Carter was basically Highlander crossed with like a Confederate captain. And he ends up on Mars fighting aliens and falling in love with a gorgeous, mostly naked woman.
That's all the key demos.
There's nothing there not to love. Right. It's perfect. But it's why it's been popular for 105 years. But Hulk is even cooler in some ways because, you know, when John Carter goes to Barsoom, you're kind of like, I wonder if he can stand up to these vicious four-armed green Tharks. When Hulk goes to Sakaar, you're like, oh, Sakaar. Yeah. You know, here comes Hulk. And we already know that nobody can stand up to the Hulk. So you might as well give it up. So,
well, one of the things that was most impressive to me, and again, maybe this is because I haven't read a lot of Hulk comics. You know, my impression of the history of published Hulk comic books is very simplistic. You know, he's running from the army and it's Hulk smash and he's throwing tanks around. And okay, sometimes he's smart, sometimes he's not.
Yeah.
But what I found in this story was a very, I don't want to say nuanced Hulk, but he was heroic.
Yeah.
He wasn't just a monster on the run. He actually took up the mantle of hero. And maybe in a very pragmatic way, but it was still heroic and inspirational. And I'm thinking of like how he insisted on everybody just being free. Like when they later in the story, when they took that original monster from the first gladiator battle and had him fighting him. Yeah. And what did he do? He found the control disc on that monster and destroyed it and told the creature to be free too.
And like in the very next frame, the creature's like they're riding on him. Like he's an ally, not as a servant, but as like an ally. Like he's joined the club.
Yeah, he's joined Team Hulk.
That was awesome. Yeah. Well, so you're right.
Truly, you know, going around doing that stuff and really fighting for freedom and just look. It's like I don't really want to help you, but I just want you to be free so you can make your own choice. You know.
Well, he's a cynical and embittered hero for most of the story. And so, you know, part of what you're trying to overcome in this story is that cynical, that in that bitter cynicism, right? That's the that's the biggest thing the Hulk has to overcome, because once he does that, we know he can destroy anybody he gets mad at. You know, he he kind of they do kind of a kryptonite trick on him, which is he comes through the portal and that weakens him, you know, just enough that he's not, you know, it weakens him enough that he is in some danger, so that we're not just totally taking his victory for granted. But that changes fairly quickly, and the real foe he has to overcome after that is his own attitude, his own cynicism. You know, he has to be dragged almost kicking and screaming to cooperate, to help anybody besides himself. You know, I wanted to point out one other thing. You mentioned Meek. I think the interesting thing about Meek, the big bug character, is that he shows that in some ways, this story is a Greek tragedy, and the hero in that structure would be Meek. Hulk is the catalyst, because Meek is the one that changes. Hulk never really changes, other than just kind of overcoming his own reticence to be involved. But Hulk is the one that arrives, gets stirred into the drink, and changes everything. Meek is the one that is changed.
Yeah, I found Meek very interesting. I mean, you know, he started off as the archetypical fool type character, and and you get his backstory, and it's very, you know, very sympathetic, and you feel bad for him and everything.
And then he goes nuts.
What it is you see him get inspired by Hulk,
and then you
turn around and you see him inspiring others of his own kind. And then when the King Bug dies or something, there always has to be one like hulked up King Bug or something. And when his predecessor went down, Meek became the new, you know, the new Big Bug,
King of the Bugs.
Yeah, and was was an inspirational leader in his own right. And of course he got kind of bloodthirstier as it all went on.
Yes, he did.
But to see, you know, to see, you're right, he's the one that had the transformation, literally a transformation.
Yeah.
And had a large character arc there. So that was very, very fun to watch him. Can we talk a little bit about Korg?
Is that the stone man from Saturn or whatever? Is that what he was?
Yeah,
or who's a lava man? I get them all mixed up.
It's Cronan is the name of the planet. He's Korg from or of Cronan. So
okay.
So very couple of interesting things about, I don't know Korg in particular, but Cronans in particular have already appeared in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. In Thor: The Dark World.
Okay.
The opening little bit where we're introduced to Thor and that little bit of action they're having where he and Sif and the Warriors 3 are...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's the rock guy that comes up, and it's almost like the sword versus gunfight in Raiders of the Lost Ark. a Cronin comes up, and everybody backs up like, ooh. And then Thor just, like, shatters him with just, you know, one shot of his hammer, and it's over that way. But that was a Cronin. I mean, that is... the same alien creature as we have in Korg here in Planet Hulk. But the first time Cronins appear in Marvel Comics, do you know where that was?
It had to be in like an early Thor or early Avengers.
It was the very first Thor in Journey into Mystery number 83.
Okay.
You have them...
I was thinking he was like the Stone Men of Saturn or something.
Yeah, well, I don't remember if this is one of those early things that end up getting changed or what, but it's that alien race that's in Thor's first Marvel appearance. And they've actually, and then we see that, I don't think we saw that particular alien race again until Planet Hulk. And now here we are with the cinematic universe, and he's shown up in Thor: The Dark World. And then we saw a group of them very briefly in, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
We did.
When they were zipping through and we saw a bunch of quick little scenes like where Stan Lee's cameo happened.
Yeah.
Remember that? One of those little quick shots was he was flying over some Cronins.
Aha! I was right. I just looked up Stone Men from Saturn, and it says Cronins, and then in parentheses, Stone Men from Saturn. Thor foes.
There you go. Well, there you go.
That's who I was thinking it was. Yeah, okay.
Okay, it's all the same. We're both right.
Journey into Mystery 83, The Stone Men from Saturn. That's it.
Yep.
How cool.
Let's talk about the Warbound. I mean, mm-hmm. Greg Pak needed a motley crew of various aliens. So he didn't just make up some new aliens. He drew a little bit from the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got a Cronin that dates back to Journey into Mystery number 83. And you've got a Brood.
That was funny. Yeah, because the Brood actually ends up being like a good guy.
Exactly.
Playing with the kids and stuff. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, he turns sympathetic. Like, you get to know him, you know? Or I think it's a female. You get to know her.
There's two big scary bugs in this story, and the one you'd think is horrible ends up being really nice, and the one you think is nice ends up being pretty bad, or at least pretty, you know, angry and stuff.
And as a reader, you're right there in it. I mean, you don't have a problem with it. So, I mean, again, a testament to the strength of the writing. I mean, I thought it was just cool. It's like, you know, you think of, like, the Brood is just some, like, inhuman monster that the X-Men have to fight. But here's one that you actually get to know a little bit, and like I say, you're sympathetic because you get the backstory on them and you understand them, and they end up, you know, they're fighting for good. So it's I thought it was very cool. Now, I don't know if the other members of the Warbound, and for those that might not know, Warbound being kind of Hulk's team, they all were thrown into the – they formed in the arena when they're all gladiators, and then when they were able to make their escape, they stuck together. Let me say real quick, they basically – end up escaping, inspiring the countryside around them to rebel against the king.
Yep.
And when the king had a elite bodyguard, female named, I guess, Ciara,
the old strong, yeah, whatever that means.
And she was loyal to him, and she and Hulk were fighting. And then there was these spores that created spikes in anybody it touched. It was like a virus, some family members and loved ones of members of the Warbound were killed and lost. Mm-hmm. And
a lot happens.
A lot's packed in here. So when the Hulk, you know, Hulk and his team escape and they're starting to inspire the countryside or whatever, there's another breakout of these spikes, this virus thing. Well, Sierra finds out that the Red King did it on purpose.
He's quite a jerk.
He's not a cool dude. No. So she actually turns against Sierra, turns against him,
right,
and becomes loyal to Hulk. And then it ends up Hulk and Red King, of course, in a one-on-one fight. And when Hulk wins, Hulk's now the king. So he's gone from a gladiator slave to the king of the planet.
Yeah.
Over the course of this 14-issue run.
Yeah, but we weren't surprised, though.
Not surprised, but, I mean, it's just a cool story arc.
Yeah.
It's like a self-contained... Like you say, you and I, we're not regular Hulk readers, but we can just... You just drop Planet Hulk story in front of us, and we can read it, and we get a very satisfying, experience.
I think it's as good of a Hulk story as you're going to get.
Exactly. Exactly. And it speaks right to the very themes of the core of the character. So, I mean, that's why it works.
Now, I've got a couple of technical questions. They call him Green Scar because when he first lands, the Red King in his armor cuts him or something. But then they keep referring to him as some kind of savior figure, and I can't think what his name was.
The Sakarsan.
Yeah, the Sakarsan. And I'm like, well, they never resolved that. They kind of leave it out there that he is or he isn't, and people argue about it all the time, but they never tell us who that is or if Hulk is him or he.
Yeah, the planet is named Sakaar, and so this prophesized savior was going to be called Sakarsan. Mm-hmm. And then there was also going to be the World Destroyer.
Right.
It was going to be the bad guy or the counterpart in this prophecy, and it was kind of left ambiguous, or people had different opinions depending on, you know, who it was. If Hulk represented the Sakarsan or the World Destroyer, or was he both?
Both, yeah.
And that was a dichotomy that continued on into World War Hulk. So and maybe it didn't get fully definitively, you know, answered, but you do see what happens. I mean, we have him basically win the planet at the end. And can we go ahead and discuss the ending here real quick?
Well, let's talk about the ending. That's what I was going to ask you. So we basically, the old strong lady, Sierra Mist, she marries him and is pregnant. And he's living, now he's living like Conan the Barbarian or John Carter with Dejah Thoris in his palace with his big bed and everything, which, by the way, is in the Thor trailer, but we'll get to that. And then the shippy came in, and we didn't really talk about how he got there. And I wanted to say something about that. Let's
break this down a little bit further. First of all, that the romance could happen between him and between Sierra and him. To me, that's a fascinating choice for a mate. I mean, look how their courtship was basically fighting each other.
Yeah.
So, she was someone who could hold her own in a battle with him, and they won respect for each other by how well they did in combat. So I thought it was interesting to see, here we are on this vicious, brutal planet, and he basically woos and weds this warrior woman, which I don't, that's not Betty Ross. I don't know who else, he's had his past romantic interest, but,
Well, it's not the first alien woman that he's. I mean, there was Jarella, on the.
Jarella.
She was the Microverse or something. I can't remember what, but she's green. I know that, so she definitely wasn't from around here.
But what you get, if you can just ignore the last two pages, what you get is a happy ending for Hulk.
Yeah,
I mean,
can't have that.
He has an opportunity. He has more than one opportunity to go back home to Earth, and he's like, "You don't get it. I am home. And this is where I want to be. Yeah. I'm happy." And you see him, he's the king. Oh, here's another example of being a hero. Mm-hmm. He's the king. And in order to keep the spike virus under control, he sits there and lets the spikes feed on him because he's strong enough to not be killed by it. Right. And if he just lets these spikes feed on him, and it hurts, and it weakens him, but it protects all his people that he rules over.
That's pretty impressive for Hulk.
And that's Hulk the hero that I don't think I've ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like a heroic and just king. He's got his wife. He's got a child on the way. He's on the planet he wants to be on. Everybody's going to leave him alone. He's not, being chased by Thunderbolt Ross anymore. There's your happy ending. The end. You don't have to read any more Hulk comics ever. His story's over. He won.
Now, hold on. We got to put a bookmark in here because we got to say how he came to be on that planet because we're about to go back and undo all that, right? So,
all right, go right
so ahead. So you mentioned that Civil War is going on. You got to get rid of the Hulk. Well, I said back at the time, and we talked about this in the Assembled books, that if basically one of the problems I had with Civil War, this is documented over and over, is that it's an example of knowing the ending that the writers want and forcing events to lead up to the outcome you want, which never seems right. Now, I'm not talking about Civil War in the movies. They did that right, and it was great. I'm talking about the Civil War series in 2006, the comic book. And in it, they decided how they wanted things to end, and they shaped events so that they would give them the result they wanted. And one of the things they said was, well, we want Iron Man to basically conquer Marvel Earth. And Iron Man is like seventh, on the power list at best. So you got to get rid of six other individuals if you're going to do that or co-opt them. So they get rid of Thor. They get rid of, Dr. Doom. I forget how, somehow. They have to get rid of the Hulk. And they send Black Bolt to the moon. They do everything they need to do to make sure that Iron Man is basically the most powerful being left on Earth, so he can conquer the Earth. Well, to get rid of Hulk, they trick him onto a spaceship, right? They knock him out, or they Murdoch him from A-Team or something. They get him on a spaceship.
They recruit him for a S.H.I.E.L.D. mission. He agrees to go up in space to do a mission for him.
Yeah. And then he wakes up, and he's going through a wormhole, and they're on a recording telling him, and it's the Illuminati, which is basically Iron Man and Doctor Strange and Mr. Fantastic and Black Panther and Sub-Mariner and Black Bolt. Yeah, they're telling him, you know, this is for your own good. We hate it, but we're sending it to a really, really nice place where it'll be unicorns and butterflies, you know, and Snickers bars hanging from every tree. But of course, he goes through the wrong wormhole and he ends up on Battle World, you know, Sakaar. So he thinks they did this on purpose. And this is what I was talking about earlier about different perspectives, that from their perspective, they're actually doing something pretty merciful and good for him. But from his perspective, he doesn't want to hear all that. He just knows that they put him on a spaceship and he's here and it's their fault.
Exactly.
So now the spaceship gets carried back around. The spaceship blows up, which we first think is an accident.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so he blames the Illuminati.
Right. Again, they didn't just blow up.
No, it blows up everything.
It blows up everything. And kills everybody. All his happy ending is gone in a flash, including his wife.
And his unborn baby.
And his unborn child. And she dissolves in his arms.
Yeah, boy. That would make me want to go blow up on Earth, no doubt.
So the final panel in the Planet Hulk story is he's back in his gladiator gear. He's outside of a spaceship riding it, spear thrust forward and heading to Earth, and he's ready to kick some butt.
He is. And that's going to lead us into
World War Hulk.
Oh, yes.
And that's World War Hulk is its own event. So Civil War is over and they are ready for Hulk to come back to the Earth. So this was like a smaller crossover event. You had some tie-in series. But it's obviously the catharsis you need after being like punched in the gut by the last couple of pages of Planet Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so the motivation is so solid and you're totally on Hulk's side here. At the same time, it is not as nuanced or as detailed as Planet Hulk. It is just four or five issues of Hulk smash. But it's right at that moment, that's all you want. And so it's to me it was very satisfying in that, realizing it was a simpler story, not caring, it was still very satisfying to see Hulk come to Earth and beat up everybody after what had happened to him.
I thought the most effective of those was the very first one when he's on the moon with Black Bolt and Medusa. And of course, Medusa's the mouth of Sauron for Black Bolt. And she basically tells Hulk, you know, get out of here, get lost. My husband doesn't want anything to do with you or whatever. And Hulk starts stomping his way toward Black Bolt. And Black Bolt, of course, whispers something at Hulk, which should pretty much kill him. And Hulk, right, of course, gets blown halfway across the moon.
Right.
And then Hulk gets up and dusts himself off. And the next thing you know, a very butt-whooped Black Bolt is being held up like a sack of flour by the Hulk.
No, when he stood up and dusted himself off, he said something like, "You don't get it. I want to make you scream." And he comes after Black Bolt.
That's a great
And then it cuts, and now here's Hulk holding up a beaten
just
Black Bolt.
Down, which we hadn't really seen before. I mean, Black Bolt is supposed to be one of the absolute top level. When he uses his power, he's one of the top level, dudes. So
exactly,
that was very effective. Of course, we get an Iron Man versus Hulk fight, but
they structured. I believe if I remember this right, they structured that miniseries so that he basically had a one-on-one fight with each member of the Illuminati per issue.
Right, that was the impression I got. Yeah.
There was a Black Bolt fight. There was an Iron Man fight. There was a Doctor Strange fight. There was a Mr. Fantastic fight.
Yeah.
So he got in. I was happy to have that because at the end of Planet Hulk, I needed it. It was awesome.
Yeah.
There was one very big flaw with it that I don't like.
Yeah.
And that is that it depended on the character of Sentry.
He all the way through like the second half of it is waiting for Sentry to decide to get up and go fight the Hulk, and you're just like, this guy is so lame, he's so stupid.
And it took Sentry versus Hulk to finish the story, and I just like, there are very few characters that that I hate worse than Sentry
is just the worst idea ever. He's so bad. It's just awful.
But I'll tell you this, it wasn't just the World War Hulk miniseries, that was the main series, but you had some tie-in series. I know that the actual, Planet Hulk took place within the issues of the regular Hulk series. And then for World War Hulk, they had its own miniseries that was separate. But back here on the regular Hulk series, continuing the numbering from the Planet Hulk issues, you had some tie-in issues. And if you read those two, there were some like other miniseries like Gamma Corps or whatever that were all tied into World War Hulk. But reading World War Hulk mini and the related issues from the Hulk series, reading those together is a very satisfying experience because they really do mesh well. Like you're seeing the same events from different perspectives, where you're reading in World War Hulk, you're following Hulk, and then he happens upon a group of these random characters like Hercules and Angel and Amadeus Cho, and you're like, where do they come from? Mm-hmm. But in the tie-in issues in the Hulk series, you're following Hulk and Angel and Amadeus and what they're doing, and they just happen to run into Hulk at some point. So you're kind of getting two different sides of the same story, and they organized that well. It worked. So it was fun. Those tie-in issues that immediately follow the Planet Hulk issues, those tie-in issues of World War Hulk, that served as the segue for handing the series over to Hercules.
So, right.
So after, in fact, the first Incredible Herc trade paperback is called World War Hulk, is the name of the Herc trade. This is getting confusing to say. But the numbering for the Hulk series continued even after it was a Hercules book. But that segue happened there during World War Hulk. And one day I would love to get into the Hercules. I got to find somebody that'll read the Hercules series for me so we can talk about it. Incredible Hulk was written by Greg Pak and was just fantastic. But there's no need to go into it right now. But
before we wrap up the World War Hulk story and then talk about the Thor Ragnarok trailer a little bit in our last few minutes, I got to do our quick shout out to our patrons. We always have to thank our monthly supporters who keep all of our programs on the air. That, of course, is Nicholas Cottrell, as well as David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, and Matthew Wagstaff. You guys keep us rolling, keep the White Rocket flying, and we appreciate it very much. I have to mention a programming note here, which is that this may very well be the last or next to last Avengers Assemble show in this feed, but we're not going away. We're just moving. It's like a TV show that doesn't go off the air. It just changes channels, but it's still around. So we're going to be moving over to the main White Rocket Entertainment feed. So I'll continue to post these episodes on the AvengersAssemble.net website, where the links already are to them. But to get the shows in the future on iTunes, just subscribe to White Rocket Entertainment. And it'll be mixed in with the other great shows on that show. If you don't like it, you can delete it or ignore it and just wait for the next Avengers show to pop up on the feed. So that's a big move for us because it'll save us money. It'll make the money that our patrons contribute to help us stay on the air go further, and we can do more with it and make us more economical. It just didn't make sense doing this since we want to do at least a show a month on this show. But even then, you know, having an entirely separate feed just for that didn't make financial sense. This way we can consolidate and we can do a better job getting all of our shows out there on an unlimited basis, on one big unlimited account. It's a lot more financially reasonable. The other thing that I want to mention before we – and you got something to mention too – is that the ninth Sentinels novel just came out. And it wraps up the third trilogy, so there's three complete big Sentinel stories out there now. The new one is called Volume 9 Vendetta, so be sure to look for that on Kindle and in paperback. And, of course, Pete Mylan is slowly working his way through the catalog, converting them all to Audible, to audiobooks. But also, within the next month or so, the art book will be out. I promised Chris Kohler, our interior artist, that when all nine books in this series were done, that we would collect all of his art into one big illustrated art book. And I am about 97% done putting that together. So In fact, just tonight I sent him off the proof. I haven't written the introduction yet, but everything else is pretty much done. So look awesome. For a big oversized art book of all of that interior black and white art coming up probably in June. And I'll have them with me if you are at LibertyCon in Chattanooga. So what did you just – what do you got coming out very soon, David?
Well, it's an exciting time for me. Well, first of all, let me say I've got a little bit of catching up doing the Sentinel series. I just recently purchased Dark Crusade, which is I guess the middle book in this third trilogy.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying it, mm-hmm. but I have not made a lot of progress in it because I have been busy putting the finishing touches on my own project. I'm mm-hmm. trying to get that out the door as quickly as possible. So I'm the writer of the Galahad's Doom series. The first book in the Galahad's Doom series came out in 2014. You can search Amazon for Galahad's Doom, you'll find it. You interviewed me for it in episode 52, as I recall, of the White Rocket show. If people want to go and hear some more of that, but it's a sword and sorcery, medieval epic fantasy type story with a heavy spiritual theme. And I have been working hard on the second book, and it's ready.
I can't wait.
It's just about ready to come out. I was targeting June 8th for debuting the book because I'm making an appearance that day. But that's not realistic because what's happened is I've gotten some late feedback from my beta readers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going back through, doing another polish on the manuscript, and I'm engaging right now with the cover artist and the graphic designer, and everything is going full speed. I did a GoFundMe campaign to kind of cover the design costs so I could control exactly how all this was going to look and, mm-hmm. and get the team that I wanted in place,
mm-hmm.
Which is not the cheapest team in the world, but they are fantastic. They're absolutely worth it, and I could not have been pleased more with how the first book came out. So it was worth it to me to do everything I could to get them back for this book, and I know I'm going to be excited about it. As soon as all those pieces line up, I'll be approaching White Rocket Books and trying to get this thing published as quickly as possible. I'm hoping now to just have it out by the end of June. So, but I'm very happy with how the book turned out, and I hope everyone that read the first book will be on board. And the fact that there's two now in the series, maybe we can get some more people interested. So
heck yeah.
I would encourage everybody to check out Galahad's Doom.
Well, I love the first one, and I can't wait. So I'm really looking forward. Well, let's get into our last little bit. So we got to finish out World War Hulk, and then we got to talk a little bit about the Thor trailer, and that'll be it for tonight. So so Hulk beats down all of his tormentors, the Illuminati, and then lay out for us how it kind of plays out. Because it wasn't entirely clear to me, in fact, but I want to hear your interpretation of it, and I'll see if it matches up with what I came up
with. All right, now say that again. I think I missed you there. What'd you say?
I was just saying that... Hulk beats down all of his tormentors, all of the Illuminati, and then lay out for us, David, how it plays out after that, because I wasn't entirely clear on the ending of this, and I want to see if it matches up with what your interpretation of it matches up with mine.
Oh, goodness, you're putting me on the spot. I don't know if I'm going to have a good answer for you. Basically, Amadeus Cho, I believe, is the one who confronts him. And says that, and basically is able to prove to him that you're still Banner. Cho is someone who, I guess he, let's just flash back a little bit. In the middle of all this Planet Hulk stuff, the Giant Size Hulk number one special came out. And it was a little anthology of some short stories. But in it, there was a quick little story where Bruce Banner is like, I guess, on the run or just kind of drifting around the Southwest, and he encounters Amadeus Cho in this diner, and that's how the two of them meet. And and the Hulk, he ends up hulking out and saving Amadeus Cho. Amadeus Cho, I think, had only appeared in like there was like a new issue of Amazing Fantasy that came out earlier in the decade, where the whole point was to introduce new characters, and here he was being used again. Well, he comes back in World War Hulk, and just really, I guess, he's like the new Rick Jones almost. He's thankful that the Hulk saved his life, and he believes in Hulk, and he's defying all of the military and all the authorities and all the danger around him, and he's defying all the superheroes that are trying to tell him otherwise, and he's just believing in the Hulk, and he's not giving up on the Hulk. Well, he gets to confront the Hulk, and he's able to talk to him and, I guess, convince him that he's still he still really is Banner, because despite all this mayhem and violence and destruction throughout his life as the Hulk, going back to throwing tanks around and stuff, he never actually killed anybody. Mm. So it's like he always knew how far to go and when he could unleash, but still hold back enough that there wasn't a high body count. And I think by demonstrating to him that he was still Banner, that there's still a good side to him, he was able to calm down. Now, there's more to it than that, and I'm blanking on it right now, but I know that was a key part.
Well, Rick Jones had something to do with it, too. Didn't Rick Jones get wounded or something?
Yeah.
It seems
he did,
like. I just read it like a week ago, and it didn't make complete sense to me then, and now I'm just like, I know a bunch of stuff happened, and eventually he basically changes his mind, right? I mean, he
basically does. He basically gets talked down.
Yeah.
And is willing to give it up. He turns back into Banner. He's I guess willingly placed back in this bunker that's underground somewhere in the Southwest.
Yeah. He fights the Sentry, and I'm trying to remember. Reverts. I don't even the Wikipedia summary doesn't really do a whole lot. Rick Jones pushes Banner aside and is injured, causing Banner to return to Hulk form. As the Hulk attacks the Warbound, the Meek reveals. Oh, that was the part we were trying to get to. Is that Meek reveals? That's the big bug dude reveals that the explosion of the spaceship that killed his wife and his unborn child and all that was not caused by the Illuminati.
Yeah, that's right.
But by it was by the Red King loyalists, and Meek chose not to prevent it, hoping the incident would encourage the Hulk to keep destroying.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the major part we got to talk about. Meek. I guess discovered it in time. He could have prevented it,
right?
And he chose not to. And the reason why, because at this point, you got to understand what Meek was like when we first met him. When he was skinny little Meek, and he was the fool, and he was scared. And now here he is. He's I guess had a metamorphosis into the king bug, and he's now the bloodthirstiest of them all, and he's the angriest of them all, and he takes up one line Hulk had earlier in the year about never stop making them pay, and that becomes his anthem. And
right, that's right.
And he sees Hulk getting soft.
Yeah.
Like Hulk's getting happy.
Yeah.
Hulk's not angry anymore. He doesn't want Hulk to stop fighting.
Right.
So he makes sure that Hulk's got a reason to keep being angry. And even after they're on Earth and all this starts coming out, he's still like, never stop making them pay, never stop making them pay. And so when Hulk does realize that, you know what, it wasn't the Illuminati after all, you know, oops, my bad, it was Meek, enabled him to give up the fight.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I like the little coda here that Namor was spared from the Hulk's wrath because Hulk discovers that Namor was the only one of the Illuminati that said, if you do this, he's going to come back and want revenge. You're right. I bet Namor knew that because that's what he would have done.
Yeah.
Hey, they're a lot alike, you know.
Yeah, you're right. And to me, it's just World War Hulk. I mean, he's never had a reason to be angrier. He's coming to Earth and he's kicking butt. I mean, that's just... Is to me, he had us fully on his side, you know. I was on Team Hulk. I was ready to see some damage done. I don't know. It was a great catharsis after reading Planet Hulk, and just, you know,
yeah,
I was happy with it.
Now, didn't they do something with Hulk's son or something like that?
Well, I can tell you this. After Planet Hulk, after World War Hulk, they did a What If issue. Where his son survived on Sakaar, and he became, I guess it was called Son of Sakaar. And it's weird. I think the son's name was Scar, but he was also Son of Sakaar. And that was a What If issue. And then he had his own series for a while, and I just don't know if that was a What If timeline or if they somehow found a way to say that he lived and grew up fast and was still on. I never read any of those, so I don't know. But yes, there was a spinoff series or a series inspired by that featured his son, which I believe was Gray, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Well, Any last thoughts on that? I want to make sure we have a chance to talk about the Thor trailer a little bit. But
well, I think what I have to say is a good segue into the Thor trailer.
Okay.
And that is, there was a moment in Planet Hulk where he's a gladiator, and then they open the doors and reveal his opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a friend from work. It's somebody he knows from the Defenders. It's the Savage Surfer is his it's his opponent.
And so, they just lift that right out, but they change who it actually is in the movie, right?
Yeah, they, you know, the fact that he's the two familiar Marvel heroes from Earth are having to fight each other. I mean, Silver Surfer's not from Earth, but you know what I mean. Are having to fight each other in this gladiatorial arena. You know, that's an element that they translated in for the Thor movie. And so that was fun. And of course, it's played for a big laugh in the Thor movie. So, you know, it's good. But anyway, let's get into Thor. Let's talk about it.
Well, I'll just wrap up my thoughts on the whole Hulk thing by saying, yeah, again, I'm not a Hulk fan, but this is, if I had to read one Hulk story, I think this would be the one, because it adds so many layers to him that take advantage of what he already has, right? I mean, Pac didn't have to change him. He just added new layers to interact with him and to affect him and make him a more interesting character, because you know that we've always said that Hulk is far more interesting as a supporting character, even in his own stories, than he is as the main character. But this is like one case where you have enough supporting characters around him that are interesting enough to make him interesting in his own right. So that's what I appreciated about it.
And it took an alien environment to put him in a place where he could really serve that in the story.
Yeah.
He doesn't really work on Earth very much for what you're saying there.
The only other thing you could probably do is take him into Asgard.
Yeah.
That would be very interesting. So, okay, so Thor Ragnarok is coming out later this year. Yeah, November of this year.
Yes.
And we saw the trailer, as you said, recently. And it's interesting because it looks like they're taking Thor and putting him in the role of the Silver Surfer, but making the movie about him. And we see Planet Hulk as the environment Thor is trapped in.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they mesh those two. I don't know how much this is going to be Planet Hulk. At first, I was thinking, well, there's going to be just a gladiatorial fight, and it's Hulk in the armor, you know, with the one arm armor and the Roman helmet. So we get the Planet Hulk look, and yeah, he's fighting in an arena, but how much Planet Hulk are you going to get? Well, doggone, if we're not going to have Sierra Oldstrong, his bride, in this movie with his, like, giant jawbone bed frame thing that this monstrous bed that he has, it's a set piece in the movie, so
yeah.
I don't know how much Planet Hulk we're going to get. Maybe we're going to get a lot. I'm very impressed as a, you know, looking at it as a Planet Hulk fan, I guess I'm impressed that much is getting in, and makes me wonder what that implies about, you know, what all is going to be in the movie. So it's going to be interesting, but and of course, I mean, what a trailer. I mean, there's so much good stuff.
Well,
in
there's
that trailer.
The cast is huge. I mean, think about it. We've got, let's look at who we got. We got Chris Hemsworth, obviously, as Thor. Tom Hiddleston back as everybody's favorite Loki. Kate Blanchett, who was, of course, Galadriel in Lord of the Rings, comes over to be Hela, right?
Hela, yep.
Idris Elba is back as Heimdall. Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster.
Yes.
I like how they're taking quirky actors and turning them into quirky Marvel characters. We had Benicio del Toro, right, as the Collector, and now we've got Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster. How strange. I think Tessa Thompson is Sierra, whatever. Carl Urban.
Oh, no, I think Tessa Thompson's a Valkyrie, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, somebody's playing Sierra, right?
Yeah, I don't know who. I've just seen concept art.
I've seen a photograph of Tessa Thompson, and she looks like Sierra Oldstrong.
Oh, maybe
she's
got
the
curveball.
She got the hair pulled back. She's got kind of a gray face, you know.
Ah, okay.
So I don't know if they're combining those characters into one character, maybe. I don't know. It would kind of make sense in a way, I guess.
Yeah, but I also thought she was a Valkyrie, not so much the Valkyrie, you know, from the Defenders. So
right.
I don't know. We'll see. Right.
Carl Urban, who we all love for two of his roles. I mean, he was Éomer in Lord of the Rings, who was awesome. Mm-hmm. And he's Dr. McCoy in the new Star Trek, one of the only good things, in my opinion, about the new Star Trek. But he's the executioner, right?
Yes, the executioner. You know, there's that classic Walt Simonson story where executioner meets his death, where he's on the Rainbow Bridge with two machine guns gunning people down.
Yeah, I never read that one.
You get that shot in this trailer. You see Carl Urban as Scourge, as the executioner, with a machine gun blazing away. Oh,
man, which awesome. showing me characters like that using machine guns is very Amber-like, right? That's very much Corwin with his automatic weapons attacking the assaulting Amber. That hits my happy spot right there, having godlike characters, immortal characters using machine guns to attack. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and it's Lee and Kirby, because it's not just a mythological tale of gods. It's set in the Marvel Universe, and you're going to get some like real world stuff mixed in there in some
goofy
way.
That's a good point.
Go ahead.
Well, I did and of course we got the Hulk and we got Odin, but I wanted to mention that if you had told me that you have Carl Urban as the executioner and then Kate Blanchett is in the movie, I would have thought she was the Enchantress.
Yeah.
But I don't think we have the Enchantress, do we?
I haven't seen her. I don't know if we do or not. But let me say this about Hela in this movie. We get Hela in her full Kirby crown glory.
The headgear, yeah.
The massive headgear. Our impression of Jack Kirby is he basically drew every comic book in the 60s for Marvel. But there were only really two that he really cared about and poured a lot of, you know, focus and effort into. That was Fantastic Four and Thor.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four and Thor were his books, and he loved Thor, and he developed Asgard. He told all the Tales of Asgard stories himself. He developed all these characters, and this was a Kirby. I mean, Thor is Jack Kirby more than any of these other MCU properties.
Yeah.
This is Jack Kirby world.
That's fair.
And if I don't know if you noticed, you should have the little clickbait articles pointing out the Easter eggs all came out. I happened to see it on my own without any help, but there's this shot in the trailer where apparently the Grandmaster is in his balcony watching the gladiatorial games. And if you look at the quirky characters lined up behind him in the background, there's somebody like with like these great Kirby dots on his costume. It almost like a celestial style a design to him, you know, with the jagged lines between the circles up and down the chest.
Okay.
Just pure Kirby design.
Right.
As a matter of fact, there was some like weird like giant machinery, giant technological stuff in the background that someone found an old panel from like early Fantastic Four issues that it's exact copy. I mean, they're just like they're using Jack Kirby's panels from the 60s for concept art in this movie. I mean, they're pulling it right out. So,
well, we know Doctor Strange appears. Benedict Cumberbatch is in it. And here's an interesting note I also noticed. Did you see who's actually playing Korg the Rock guy?
No.
Waititi, the director.
Is that right?
It's mocap. It's motion capture, and he's playing him. He says, we wanted to change the idea of what a hulking guy made of rocks could be. He's huge and heavy, but with a light soul. We wanted to make him funny and a relatable entry point into this world, and Thor needs friends. So I guess the warbound people are more on Thor's side, maybe, in this. I don't know. It's just going to be interesting to see how much they use the Hulk and how he's used and how similar it is to Planet Hulk and how different it is. And I'm all for it being different because, heck, I mean, you know, we've read the story. Now let's see a kind of a different take on it. That works for me.
You know, I think what I heard a few years ago, why they would never consider doing a Planet Hulk as a Hulk solo movie.
Yeah.
A couple of reasons. Number one, this is weird. The solo rights to Hulk are kind of in a gray area. Apparently Marvel has the rights to use him as a character in their movies. But if you wanted to do a Hulk solo movie, you still have to cut Universal in on it, or else Universal has to do it or something. I don't know. So there's that tangled path you got to untangle.
Right.
But also, you know, in the Planet Hulk story, you don't really get Banner at all. So is it going to be – you're not going to really see Mark Ruffalo? I mean, that's not really Hollywood's approach to doing a movie. So it didn't really make sense to like try to – as much as that's a great self-contained story we'd all love to see – It's still satisfying that they can take this popular storyline and find a way to incorporate what they're doing with Thor. So I think it's great, even if it's nothing like Planet Hulk story. Just the fact that we're getting what we already know we're getting is already good enough for me. That okay, they're kind of checking that box. This is going to be cool. This should be awesome.
Yeah. Well, it looks good to me. The trailer's out there on YouTube. People can check it out. But I'm telling you, I've been saying all along. I mean, I love the first Thor movie. I even love the second Thor movie. And I realized that it's funny. The world loves Iron Man 3. I despise Iron Man 3. The world doesn't like Thor: The Dark World. I love Thor: The Dark World. So
I do too.
Who knows?
The problems I had. You like the first Thor more than I do. It felt kind of like was produced on a small scale. And I know. It was too much Earth on it. As far as I'm concerned, a Thor movie never has to be on Earth at all. And I don't know if we're going to see Earth in Ragnarok. But in Dark World, kind of solved a lot of the problems I had with the first movie. I like Dark World a lot. I mean, I think Thor has the potential to be Marvel's Lord of the Rings. There's no reason why they can't just go full fantasy. Don't worry about Jane Foster and Earth or anything like that. Just give us these cool environments and these cool creatures, and let's go all in. And it seems like maybe that's, you know, we got more of that in Dark World, and it seems like we're just cutting loose with this third movie. So I'm more excited about this movie than the others. I'm glad we're finally getting a helmet. I'm glad that I wish he still had his long hair, but maybe it'll grow back. I love Hela and her full Kirby headgear. That's amazing. And the Planet Hulk elements being worked into it. We got Valkyries flying on horses through battle, and man, there's some amazing imagery in there.
And she is noted. I just noted Tessa Thompson is listed as Valkyrie. I'm just wondering if they don't combine the two characters somehow, because you could do that. I could totally see them saying that this woman that one of them, you know, finds interesting on this planet is both a warrior on this planet, but also a Valkyrie who's just ended up there, kind of like Thor does. You know, it works. But,
yeah, it could work. She's going to be like the warrior woman that he's able to have a romance with him, I guess, or something like that.
Theoretically, I
can see that working.
Yeah.
I can see that working. And there was one – I forgot there was one more thing I was going to say. I can't remember what it was. Oh, well. It looks exciting. Oh, I know what I was going to say. You know, so who's this director for Ragnarok?
Taika Waititi. I'm not really familiar with him.
He played the sidekick in the Green Lantern movie.
No, really?
Yeah.
I got to look him up.
He was in Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern movie as Hal's sidekick there at Ferris Airfield. And somehow he has a career as an indie director. He's done mostly indie films, small budget stuff.
He's a New Zealand guy. There you go. Okay, I see now.
And I don't know if he's done any like big budget like mainstream blockbuster stuff before, but they threw him into this, and it looks like he has completely knocked it out of the
box. If you wanted it to be Lord of the Rings, they've brought in another New Zealand director. He's the second New Zealand director I know of after Peter Jackson, so we'll see.
Yep.
But that's pretty cool. I guess that also means that Korg the Rock dude will have a New Zealand accent, which should be pretty entertaining. which is basically an Australian accent, but just slightly different. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I agree that it's got tons of potential. I thought all along it sounded like it could be really. I was surprised they skipped straight to Ragnarok. I mean, I was like, gosh, couldn't you? You know, there's other Thor stories you can do before you go to Ragnarok. That's kind of like once you've done that, you're pretty much done. But I guess this may be the last Thor movie, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many more films Hemsworth has signed up for. I don't know any of those details. So obviously, you know, he's going to be in at least one of the upcoming Avenger movies, but I don't know if we get him after that. So,
I'll make my argument. I always do, and I'll end my part on this, which is that it doesn't have to just be in service to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They could just keep making Thor movies with Chris Hemsworth for 20 years, like James Bond movies, and I'd be perfectly happy.
Yeah,
I mean, just why stop? Just keep going, man. Keep doing
exactly.
Like you got Sean Connery, you know, just keep making them till he's bald and and pudgy, you know, and then bring in his little brother and keep making them, man. That's fine with me. So, but anyway, oh well. Any last thoughts on Hulk or Thor and how they're going to get together, friend from work? That is one of the funnier bits I've ever seen in a Marvel movie.
It's a friend from work, and then you see them face off, and they're about to punch each other and probably shatter the buildings around them.
Why is it that Thor and Hulk get the funniest bits? In every dang movie they're in, it's always Thor and Hulk get the funniest bits when they're together.
But, you know, I don't know if we know from the trailer what happens to Thor and Hulk after that moment where they fight. I mean, are they on the same team? Does Hulk leave the movie and we're done? Or I don't, you know.
Hulk didn't look happy.
Interesting to see.
Hulk did not look happy.
No.
It's not like Hulk went, hey, Thor, what's up? No, it was like, you know, so. Should be a lot of fun. All right. Well, let's wrap this sucker up. We will be back as soon as we're able to dig into our next Avengers-related topic. I've got two or three things kind of cooking, so we'll see what comes up next.
Yeah, hopefully now that I'm squared away, we can do these Avengers episodes a little more frequently.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So remember, you can find it for now at AvengersAssemble.net or on iTunes, as you probably have already. But if in about... by the end of June, end of July, you'll be looking under White Rocket Entertainment. Just go to iTunes and search White Rocket Entertainment. There's always links going to be at whiterocketbooks.com, and there's always going to be a link to this at AvengersAssemble.net. All right. I guess that's going to get us out of here for another episode. David, Avengers Assemble.
Avengers Assemble.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.